Hello and welcome to Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop role-playing games where I interview creators about their games and inspirations and about the theory, process and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, a game design enthusiast, role-playing game editor, indie hustler slash promoter and interview podcaster. You can find me on Twitter at IamFofos and on itch.io at blue-golem-games.itch.io. This week, I interview Logan Brightcrown, who publishes games on itch as Breathing Stories. As well as discussing Logan's entry to the Akashicon X Ninja Hell Productions Anime RPG Design Contest, we talked about Strikeout, his longer-term project, which is an original post-apocalyptic setting and system. Now that's out of my head and into yours, let's talk indie. Hi there, Logan.
Hi, how you going, Max?
Very good, thank you. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yep, I'm Logan. I am a queer Aussie trans man game designer. So yeah, I design games and sell them on itch. I also run and play games with my friends.
Fantastic. Do you want to tell us about some of the things you're working on at the moment?
Yeah, I've got two things sort of actively cooking at the moment. So firstly, I've got Preparing for Paris, which is a game that I'm working on as part of the Akashicon and Ninja Hell Productions game design contest. So that's been super fun.
Yeah.
You had Christopher on here a little while ago.
We did.
He talked a little bit about that. But yeah, that's been great fun and to design and have other designers there with you, like everyone encouraging each other. So Preparing for Paris is a game about personified discontinued Olympic sports as high school students.
Okay.
Which is a really wild concept and a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, that is very wild. Yeah, it sounds brilliant. I can't even begin to imagine how that works in practice. So
it's good fun.
Why don't you tell us a little about it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a concept I only really came up with due to the various caveats that the competition has. So I'm grateful that this competition exists so that I was able to create this game. That it's a GM-less game that's built on the Firebrands framework and it's empowered by the Apocalypse inspirations there as well.
Okay, yeah.
Basically running over the 4 years of American high school as these students go from basically the first year to the last year, which is senior. I remember that much.
Freshman to senior, yeah.
Right, there you go. Freshman to senior.
It sounds really good. I don't think we've actually had somebody do a Firebrands hack on Yes Indeed before. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Firebrands and then we can go into maybe how you hacked it?
Yeah, sure. So what I really enjoyed about, I've not actually played any Firebrands games, but I've read, you know, the original and a number of hacks. But what I really enjoyed about it is, you know, just the open conversation between players and how they have really evocative questions that really steer the story and provide great tools to players without forcing them into any particular narrative.
Yeah.
A lot of these questions, you know, they're really thematic and I just really like how they guide players that way. So, yeah, I've used a number of, you know, thematic questions and also the idea of various sort of mini games and having those, you know, set scenes throughout the years of high school at Olympic Academy.
Should point out, like Powered by the Apocalypse, that it is a game by Vincent and Megway Baker, and as such it is high caliber indie.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Pretty much indie superstars at this point.
Yes.
Big shout out.
Doubling down on the indie today.
So how did you bring in the Powered by the Apocalypse elements into that?
So what I borrowed from there is the roles, so the, you know, the degrees of success, you know, 10 plus being super good, 7 to 9 being sort of succeeding at cost, and then 6 and lower being a miss.
So that's a classic Powered by the Apocalypse hack, and that's your conflict and other resolution mechanic then.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds really good, and I'm looking forward to seeing the end result of that, and good luck in the competition as well.
Yeah, thank you. It ends this weekend, and then the judging process takes a little while after that. So I'm doing final edits basically tonight and anything I can squeeze in tomorrow. It's been super good because of the way that the contest is structured with like weekly check-ins and sort of guides on different points that you want to be hitting each week.
Yeah.
It's been a much more structured approach than I usually do. So I'm pretty proud of what I've been able to create and I can't wait to show everyone.
I think it sounds brilliant. So I'll be listening out for Christopher W. Reynolds' judging podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should be coming out in the next few weeks. So hopefully your game will be featured in one of those.
Fingers crossed.
You said you're working on two projects. Do you want to tell us about the second, which I think is a bit of a longer running thing?
Yes, yeah, it is. So my second one is Strikeout, which is a full system that I've been working on for a while now, and I envision working on it for a while longer. It's an original system in an original setting with brand new folks to play, and it brings together a lot of different things that I really enjoy about lots of different tabletop games that I've played in the past, and some new ideas and exploring some new territory and bringing it all together into one big fun game.
Yeah.
So that one is the premise there being that the world, after various natural and supernatural signs, the old government, as they're now called, ignored all these warnings and instead chose to sort of shore up their own power and let the world basically fall to ruin. Out of sort of the ashes of that world, the people became divided into factions based on how they believe the world should be ruled next. So you've got like the monarchy faction, there's the Wanderer faction, which is basically believes that anarchy is better and that people can look after themselves. There's a new government faction, there's the faith faction, like who believes someone who should rule is someone of great faith, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And in this divided world, if people decide to come together, they can create real and positive change because they're the only ones really acting.
Yeah, it sounds like kind of some kind of prophetic content in there. A warning to the current governments of the world.
Oh yeah, when I started this, the world wasn't quite as it is today. It's never been perfect.
Yeah, even so, you know, like with the climate events that have been happening in the last few years, particularly thinking of things that have been happening in Australia, for example, last year.
Yes.
And then not so much climate related, but, you know, when you see these big pandemics and other things happening, then it's kind of natural to think about, you know, sort of the Old Testament kind of warnings about what is to come.
Right, yeah.
That sounds very interesting. Do you want to tell us a bit about the influences, about where you picked some of that up from?
Yeah, sure. So as I've gone along, a lot of things have changed about, you know, as I've become, I guess, better at game design and had a firmer understanding of my own design process. So, I mean, originally D&D was the first tabletop that I played, and so a lot of my thinking was very rigid and sort of structured within a D&D type framework. But then as I played and exposed myself and, you know, read a lot more games, I was able to climb out of that box, which is a fine box, but there's many, many things outside of it. So masks has been an influence, particularly in the conditions that I'm now working on.
Yeah.
Rather than hit points, which is something I'm pretty excited to explore. And then having a look at a game powered by the apocalypse for sort of post-apocalyptic vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are probably my two big influences at the moment.
Yeah. And mechanically, what's the genealogy of your system? Is it a powered by the apocalypse game or is it?
No, so it uses a dice pool.
Okay, fantastic. I like dice pool mechanics.
Yeah. So it's like you want to get the number or under.
Mm-hmm.
And you count successes within your dice pool, which I enjoy because it means I don't have to do any maths. I just look at the numbers.
Yeah.
And there's good ones and bad ones. I don't have to plus or minus anything.
Yeah. And you can always make your own dice for it as well, which is, is it good? Is it bad?
It's tempting.
How do you construct your dice pool from character choices?
Yeah. So you have attributes and skills, and you'll use one attribute and one skill for pretty much every role.
Yeah.
And that, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, that was inspired, and the sort of counting successes idea from Star Trek Adventures.
I'm not actually familiar with Star Trek Adventures. I know of it. I've never played it, so that sounds very cool.
Yeah.
Is it all one dice size, or is it multiple?
Yeah, there are D8s.
D8s.
It's my favorite dice.
Tragically underrepresented die.
It is. You're right. They're so, like, a great shape.
They are, yeah. D4s, I've got to say, I'm not a fan of D4s, but mostly because I end up treading on them.
Yes, no, that's fair enough.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about Strikeout?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the magic and conditions systems at the moment, so I'd like to dive into the magic at least a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so the magic system is so there's no spells or anything, it's a verb-noun system. Like, everyone has the ability to cast magic. There's no magic-based archetype or anything like that. The idea being that, you know, magic is inherent in the world, and all you have to do is sort of think about it a little bit, and you'll be able to cast some magics. You know, obviously, the more you think about it and the more you try, the better you're going to be at it.
Yeah.
So there are three verbs. You specialize in one, and then there are a bunch of nouns, sort of each loosely based, divided into the four elements, and you specialize in one element, and then you can choose any of the nouns within that element. So, for example, the verbs, or they're called the power words, make, disrupt, and alter. And then you pair that with any noun and anything that you can think of, basically, with that noun and verb, you can just do. And there are consequences depending on how skilled you are in magic. The way that you resolve magic is you choose basically a number of like positive impacts that you want to hit with your spell.
Yeah.
And then the ones that you don't choose, their opposite negative consequences will happen.
And that ties really neatly into how moves in Powered by the Apocalypse work as well. You can see like the genealogy of where that's coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really interesting, yeah. It's a kind of natural language processing approach to spells. I don't know if you've played the game Tech Noir.
I've heard of it, but not played.
Yeah, it has this really similar thing where you have adjectives to describe your character condition. Anytime you can use those adjectives in a sentence, then you get a bonus to your roll.
Mm.
But I really like the way you set up your magic system here. That sounds very cool.
Yeah, and it's really awesome. Every time that I've been able to play test, the players always surprise me with what they come up with.
Yeah.
Just using, you know, a set bunch of words. And I'm, you know, creating pre-generated characters usually for these play tests at cons and the like.
Yeah.
And yeah, still they're coming up with things I never would have imagined. A really, really great example is one player had Disrupt Air.
Yeah.
Which basically takes away air, and I was thinking, okay, yeah, you know, if your boat is being blown off course, you can stop the wind and, you know, steal the boat for a while. But what this player did was there was a bell, an alarm going off, alerting, you know, the big bad to the boat's position that they were in. And so he disrupted air around the bell, and so the bell had nothing to vibrate against and was thus silent.
Smart. That's fantastic. It's a good system of constraints whilst encouraging imagination, so it makes it quite different to, say, selecting a spell off a list. I would say that's a very neat way of making a magic system, so kudos to you. I like it.
Thanks.
And you were mentioning conditions as well, if you'd like to get into that a little bit. That does sound really like Masks.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about how Masks handles it and then about how Strikeout handles it?
Yeah, so in Masks, you have, I think there's, what, five conditions, and often you'll mark a condition, and that will usually have some sort of mechanical effect, like you have a negative to your roll to do this move, and then once you mark a certain number of conditions, like, your character has to leave the scene to recover. I've been very heavily inspired by those conditions.
Yeah.
Because I really like how they sort of build on the narrative rather than just being an arbitrary number that you sort of whittle down.
Yeah.
So I'm all about, you know, tabletop games being the tools to build stories of all sorts, which I find, you know, improvised storytelling just to be art, basically, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Creating something with your friends or with dice or with cards that you never could have otherwise. And I think that's pretty magical.
Yeah. I think we're cut from the same cloth.
Yes, excellent. And with my conditions, very similar. You don't take damage, you take conditions. The thing I've sort of changed after a really great conversation with a friend of mine was, so my conditions, and similar to Masks as well, are based on, you know, typically negative emotions. So I've got angry, scared, guilty, and dejected. Those are the four conditions. But I was talking with this friend. Originally, I had, you take angry, you roll this less dice, something like that. But I was talking with a friend, and she was saying that, sure, being angry, maybe it makes you a bit volatile, maybe it makes you a bit shouty, but it can also provide clarity. And, you know, when you're angry, sort of your filter goes away and it becomes very obvious what you need in that moment. And so if you allow yourself to feel angry, you can sort of get more in touch with yourself.
Yeah.
And so she's telling me all about the positive sides of these negative emotions. And so I've been working on the conditions to sort of have these positive and negative outcomes to them. And so that's been really interesting.
That's really, really cool. That's kind of like how aspects in Fate work to some extent. If you have consequences in Fate, it's just the same as a normal aspect. So you can invoke it positively as well as have it invoked against you negatively. So that's a really neat way of doing that. I like that. an awful lot. So that sounds like a really interesting system, and one that I'm really keen to have a look at and maybe try out. So I was sort of asking what kind of stories you're using Strikeout to tell. Are you using it to tell small-scale stories of people who are trying to do what's best for themselves and their families and their communities? Or are you looking at a wider, global, world-changing level of story?
Yeah, there's the potential for both, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And just because the world is so divided, if players want to take that on and try and unite all the people or make some sort of, you know, big change, that it's well within their prerogative to do so. But a lot of the stories that I've told so far in playtests have been on the smaller scale of, you know, how do you make a change for this town or for this family? Little stories like that, but always about making bold action, making decisions.
Yeah.
Having, you know, the ability to make change. And I think choice is important, and choosing to make a change for the positive, make a change for the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot about choices and personal growth, which again sort of ties to conditions a little bit.
Yeah.
As the way you heal conditions in Strikeout is different for each one.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is about sort of reflecting on why you took this condition and sort of learning from it and growing with it, and realizing that it's not inherently bad. So there's sort of narrative pulls and mechanical pulls with the conditions.
Sounds brilliant. Well, I'm really interested to see when this finally hits itch. Do you want to give us some kind of timeline, or do you not want to tie yourself in too much?
I don't know. I want to get like a you know, a proper draft done by the end of this year. I don't know. It's been a project in my pocket for so long. It's kind of odd to think about it being finished, but you know, the big dream is, you know, have it edited, have art in and that sort of thing.
Of course.
So I think we'll get to the end of this year and see how we're standing and go from there.
Brilliant. And yeah, I'm sure the community can't wait to see it. You must have quite a big playtest crowd, or are you just playtesting with a single group at the moment?
Yeah, I've got a fairly decent crowd. Friends from, you know, various pools. As I've been able to showcase it at ArcanaCon earlier this year, which feels like a lifetime ago, and had some great feedback from that, and slowly building the audience there. And hopefully, you know, cons in the future when they start opening up again.
It's good to get that community involvement from an early stage, I find. Or so everybody else has told me. I mean, so speaking of community, why don't you go into a little bit about how your experience of the tabletop role-playing game community and how that's helped you as a designer?
Yeah, so it has been helpful, very helpful. So my main experience has been through Twitter. I originally joined Twitter for fandom things, but as I slowly started designing games and becoming more and more passionate about tabletop role-playing games and, you know, putting them out and joining conversations, it's been really great to have people, other designers, really like lift me up and make tweets and about my games and say, oh, this is really good, I enjoyed this and that about it. Arthur did a review of one of my games fairly recently, which like the next day led to a sale with like 100% tip. And other people have approached me and been like, oh, I really like this game, can I play it with you? So it's been really amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, there's been the part where they're, you know, approaching me, you know, directly and having given me direct feedback, but just also in general, the various just like design discussions that happen on Twitter and the huge design threads have been really thought-provoking and good at looking and dissecting my own game design process and looking at others and sort of seeing where we agree and disagree and, you know, just learning things. And I think that's been really, really helpful for me as a designer.
Yeah, there are some great voices on Twitter, actually. As you said, W.H. Arthur, I think you're talking about.
Yes.
He has some very interesting ideas about how to design games and is very active, actually, in the indie community, which is really nice. There are some other fantastic voices out there. Levi Cornelson does a lot of game design exposition on their Twitter thread, and that is really interesting to read. And it's amazing, like, the voices and the people that they attract to their threads as well, like Paul Chege and various other important voices as well. That's how I see it, at least, that there are some very big names out there who are very willing to engage on a level about lifting people up through game design, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really awesome to see.
It's definitely my experience of the community as well. There are other sides to the community that are perhaps less wholesome, but that is a good aspect.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how it is with every community. There's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, so kind of like the indie scene particularly is a sort of fringe of a fringe, really.
Yeah.
There are not a lot of big voices in the indie community who are big voices, even in tabletop role-playing games, but yeah, there are some, obviously. And I think that tends to attract people who are more attracted to the edges. Certainly that's the case with me, who are more attracted to looking at quirky things and underdog things rather than things that everybody else is looking at. I think I'm kind of beating about the bush, but like basically I'm becoming significantly more interested in the big indie games and even the small indie games and basically everything in between those two, but not so much the big mainstream games.
Yeah, same cloth again.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, a lot of the people I speak to feel like that. Is there anything else you want to say about that?
Just really grateful for the community and all the different things that people have done for me and being just really inviting and uplifting.
I think another big thing about the indie scene at the moment is game jams on Itch. Everybody loves a game jam.
Yes.
It's similar to what we were saying before about constraints and imagination with regards to Strikeout's magic system. It's just like you have a prompt in front of you and that can inspire you to do something kind of cool or kind of unusual, or, you know, to go out of your comfort zone in terms of design. And that's very encouraging for small fledgling designers, and the big names as well also go after these things.
Yes, yeah, the first game I ever published on Itch was for a game jam. I've since sort of revisited it and given it a bit of a polish, but yeah, it was great fun. Even just, you know, learning that game jams are a thing and that itch.io is a place, that was all very eye-opening and very awesome.
Yeah, we all love Itch on Yes Indeed. So Logan, thanks very much for that. Why don't you tell us where we can find you on social media?
Yes, so I'm very much on Twitter. You can find me at @ink_and_stories, and in there you can find the links to my Itch, which is breathingstories.itch.io. The handle for Strikeout has its own Twitter page where I talk about, you know, some of my game design thoughts, about drop a lot of world lore, and some art as well that I've had commissioned, and that is @strikeout_ttrpg.
Cool. Make sure you follow all of those places, because Logan is good people, everybody. Thank you very much for coming on Yes Indeed. And next time you want to talk about a big game you've got in production, yeah, let's have you on again.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Marks.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for listening. And thanks again to Logan for the interview. As always, you can find all of the links in the episode description. Next time, I'll be interviewing Olivia Hill of Machine Age Productions. Olivia is a tabletop role-playing game veteran, having worked in both mainstream and indie, and is famous most recently for #iHunt, a role-playing game about economic horror and fighting monsters in the gig economy. She is also one of my favourite people in the scene, and I know you're going to love this interview. If you enjoy Yes Indeed Pod, please rate and review the show wherever you find your podcasts, or consider donating through the Ko-Fi page at ko-fi.com/yesindeedpod. Of course, you can always reach out for me through Twitter at @IamPhoPhos. That's IamPhoPhos. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is from BitQuest by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and filmmusic.io. Thanks, Kevin. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.